All right, everyone. Thank you, guys. We're going to try to do this real quick today, and we're just going to go over some basic things that we really didn't go over yesterday. Yesterday was really a bit more about quoting, and one thing we should have kind of went over more is just our just the general loan process and the actual workflow and just some really, really simple things. So I am sending the updated processing worksheet to everyone right now. Sorry, nothing like last minute. But everyone has it. So I'll just give everyone a second to open it, and that's what we're going to run through today. You'll see I now have it started. Obviously, it's dated as of today. It's now started with the general loan process. I think everyone gets that, but since we have a couple new people on the phone that are going to be new to this process, and the outside processing company that are new to our process, we have to go through our actual process and how it works so everyone's on the same page and how to track things. All this stuff is really, really important. So you will see this now goes down to page, the loan process goes down to page, what page is this? 4. And I made this really, really detailed and gave examples, but again, I am setting this up as if someone brand new could just walk into this business and just start doing it. So does everyone have it pulled up? All right, you probably do.
Yes.
I do.
Yeah,
yep.
I'm good.
Okay.
I'm grabbing it now.
Okay, yeah, yeah, no big deal. I'm just going to go through it since we only have 25 minutes, and then we'll see if anyone has questions. Marty, Ryan, I know you guys probably know a lot of this, obviously, so you know, I'm going to try and make it quick, but obviously the other ladies, this is still kind of new to them. And if you think there's anything I need to explain more, just let me know. All right, we all know everything starts with a short intake form. Maybe I could have even put there that is the responsibility of the IEP to get that on their from their borrowers, but I think we all know that. Second, you know, placement reviews the application. I just made this a little bit more detailed. One, they either disqualify the loan and provide an explanation as to why to the IEP and the borrower as to why it's not a deal. Or two, you know, we begin to shop the deal and we begin to get quotes for the borrower. So C, you know, obviously the borrower's gonna be given, you know, sometimes we give two quotes, sometimes we even give three. I mean, I've given borrowers 4 or 5 quotes on deals sometimes, but I know, you know, our time is limited, so we always do give them one. If that's if they can express to us why that one doesn't work for them, we can hear their concern, then we can try to go to another lender we know that maybe could solve that issue. So that's really how we work it. But basically, whoever that borrower decides to go with, okay, it's talking about the agreement. Whoever this borrower decides to go with, that is the document list, obviously, that is going to be issued for that lender. I just put a couple notes in here that we already went over this yesterday. If the borrower is in a purchase and sales agreement, we'll definitely get them a direct quote. Or if it's a refinance transaction, obviously they already own the property, we will get them a direct quote. Just put in there what is needed to get a direct quote if they're not in a purchase and sales agreement. I know some borrowers are going to need a pre-approval letter because the realtor is giving them a hard time. But if we're going to do all this back and forth and coordinating, we do need to collect $50 for that. I've done that so many times for people, and they never end up getting the deal anyways. We need the items in there. They just need to give us some type of proof of their credit, a bank statement proving they have the down money and closing costs, and they are going to need to give us the lender's application because the lender is going to want to approve that in order to issue a pre-approval.
We'll credit
that $50. Yeah.
If we're going to get any sort of lender app, then wouldn't we need to get a fee agreement?
Yeah, yeah, we will. Yeah, you're right. I can put that in the notes there. That's kind of like the next bullet point. I kind of go into how to explain or how we issue fee agreements and stuff. So let me just make a note there that if we are just, and that's, Ryan, thank you for bringing that up. For everyone else on the phone that's new, we don't ever give documents to borrowers that have lenders' direct names on them without a fee agreement. I have been burned like that several times in the past. Most lenders protect their brokers, so it's usually not an issue, but let's just always caution, you know, be more cautious because some lenders won't. If you don't have a fee agreement with that borrower stating, again, this is your fee, you're representing them, they're not going to protect you if they get a hold of an application and send it into them direct. So I'm just going to add that, Ryan, and then we'll run through this.
It's not always the lender, too. It could be a broker. Another broker gets it there first. I mean, who comes in after?
Oh, yeah, true. Yeah. Need a few minutes before we can ever issue a lender application or any lender documentation to the borrower. All right. I added that into the bottom of Section C. Okay, so basically, let's just go over it real quick. Before, if someone needs a pre-approval letter, again, Marty, Ryan, or me is going to get involved anyways, probably. But we just so everyone's aware, we do not give out lender applications or anything like that to borrowers until we have a signed fee agreement because the lender's name's right on there. So all they have to do is just Google the lender, contact the direct, and then, you know, they would just go right around us. D, this is just going over how to email the processor and to request the fee agreement. So say, example, Ryan's quoting a deal. He's going to email Megan, and she's going to be the processor on the file. These are the things that we need to give the processor so that they know how to issue the fee agreement. Again, everything just needs to be copied and pasted into the CRM. So please copy and paste this information into the CRM. Sometimes when I see some of you guys copy and pasting stuff into the CRM, just make sure, like, it's all together. You see how below, you know, I have broker fee. Like, sometimes I see, like, really large spaces between things, and it's really hard to, like, keep track of that. It all needs to be, like, together. So just do some backspace so it's all line by line. I suggest putting the little slashes for bullet points so you can – it's just, again, when you're getting multiple emails every day, you have to stay really organized. You have to do little things that are going to help you pay attention to what's going on. So that's basically everything we need to know. I also put in there that in the CRM, and I know probably some of you are in the CRM, if you go under any contact, you will see on the left-hand side where, under the contact info where there's a little pencil mark, you're actually going to click in there and you're going to actually end up putting all this stuff for the appraisal request in there because that's what you need to know. You need to know those things. Again, everything important goes in there. The contact info, name, email, phone number for that's what you're going to end up getting from the borrower. For the realtor, the lawyer, title representative, insurance representative, and contractor, if there's a contractor on the deal, also needs to go on the left-hand side in the background notes. You can put the information in the activity feed as well. Do that as well. I always do double, but make sure it goes in the background notes because you're going to constantly be needing to get hold of people in a deal, and you need to know who you're calling for what. One thing I didn't put in here is say if you're running multiple loans for the same borrower, they might have different insurance reps and title reps for different deals. Marty's got 3 loans that are closing tomorrow for Elliot, and he doesn't have the same contact people for every single deal. So the way I organize it in the back, anyone can go to his contact if you want to see it. It's Elliot, E-L-L-I-O-T, K-H-A-R-K-A-T-S is his last name. If you just type in Elliot, it should pop up because I'm always in his contact. I organized it by address. You'll see property address number 1, who's title, insurance, right there. And then there's a little bit about the quotes that we have in there from what lender. Property address 2, title, realtor. I didn't copy and paste insurance again, which I should have, but he was using the same insurance agent on all 3 of these deals. But just in that sense, you know, if you are running multiple deals, make sure you do copy and paste the contact information for each one. Okay, so basically that's it. I just have a couple pointers here. You know, we issue fee agreements now just based off the fee. We used to do it in points. We're not doing that anymore. Whatever the points are, that's the fee. When you send the fee agreement request to whoever the processor is, who's going to then go in and issue the fee agreement, they're going to go into the processing email and do that. just please, you know, what type of transaction is it? It always should start, it's either a purchase or refinance. Every deal is a purchase or refinance. And then what type of deal is it? Is it a rehab deal? Is it a ground up construction deal? Is it a bridge loan? Is it a permanent rental loan? So there's going to be a little bit of a curve for everyone, but ladies that are helping us processing, you don't really need to know that. It doesn't really matter because obviously, Ryan, I'm already know what type of deal is what, and I'm going to send you the document list, so it's not that really big of a deal. There's something that Ryan said to me on this deal that was important that he emailed to me, thank you, letting me know to keep a lookout for this. You know, the borrower is not a U.S. citizen, but, you know, he does have a Social Security number, and that does matter. There's all different types of foreign nationals. So he is considered a foreign national since he's not a U.S. citizen, but some have Social Security numbers, some don't. It's much easier for us to get deals done with foreign nationals, with our lenders that do have a Social Security number. Borrower's name, you know, obviously we know his name, but just put that in there. Contact information. Sometimes I go into the CRM and I will look up a borrower and they have like 4 different email addresses. And I don't know which one to email the documents to or whatever. So if you could please specify what email you're using to communicate with them, that's great. Company name they're closing in. We always need to know the entity name, and we need to know the ownership percentage. Because what's going to happen throughout this deal is maybe Kevin wants to be the personal guarantor on the loan, but then his credit doesn't check out for whatever reason. So you're going to go back to Kevin and say, hey, look, I see Jimmy's a 50% member. You know, does he have higher credit? Could he be was he willing to be the PG on the loan? Could we get the loan done under him? And most of the time, if you offer the borrower some type of resolution or suggestion to get their deal done, they really appreciate that. And they're like, yeah, whatever we got to do, you know, let's get it done. Property address, obviously. One thing we haven't been putting on this information we send to the processor to issue the fee agreement, which again, so far has just been me, Marty and Ryan, been giving this information to me, is the closing date. And whenever you or Marty send this stuff to me, I obviously just go into the intake form and I just find the closing date. But I'm noticing on a lot of these intake forms, we ask what date do you have to close, and all they keep putting is ASAP. And that's hard for me to judge, like, yeah, that what everyone needs to close ASAP. I need to know, like, what is that date to you? Because ASAP may be 30 days out for someone, and ASAP might be 10 days out from someone. And as we all start getting more and more busier and more involved processing, if someone needs to close in 10 days, which is a very quick turnaround time, you know, as a processor, if you see that information being sent to you, you're going to want to get that fee agreement out first. You know, 10 days is a very, very quick turnaround time for everyone to do what they need to do. And that's only possible on a 1-4 unit investment property, not a pure commercial one. I just put a little note down there. Whenever, you know, whoever's quoting is going to send this to the processor, just please attach in a Word document the intake form and the quote. Please date the quote on there. And we're going to try to break these quotes down as simple and as informative as possible because we understand everyone is new to this process. Yeah, go ahead.
That kind of raises the question then from a placement standpoint, should the IAP, if they submit deals that don't have a specific closing date, should that be a reason to kick it back to the IAP now and just be like, we need something more definitive?
Whenever I have a question for any of the IAPs, like when I used to monitor the loans email, I would just email what I do is when I look at the intake form and I just send one email to the IAP and the borrower. You know, I copy both of them on the email with my full list of questions if the intake form is not fully complete. And then I tell them, you know, I need you to, you know, redo this intake form. You know, you don't have to retype it all out. You can copy and paste the below and just add those answers in, you know, but just get it back so it's fully filled out so it's easy for you to, you know, copy and paste it into there. But, yeah, just so you know, anytime I have a question for the IAP, I always copy the borrower because some of these IAPs don't reach out to their borrowers, you know. And they might actually have a real deal, but then the IAP never reaches out to them. A lot of times the borrower sees at least I'm emailing, and they'll email me back the answers.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but anything that's not answered properly that you don't understand or just obviously doesn't make sense, you just, you know, go through the whole submission, email back. I always copy the borrower I understand you probably don't want to get involved in a lot of conversation and back and forth with someone who has no deal, you know, like say they don't have any money and their credit's like 500. In that situation, I would probably just email the IEP and just say, hey, you know, can they partner with someone who has more money and can that person be the PG because 500 credit score is not going to work? I would just copy the IEP. But if it's a list of questions and this is looking promising, I would copy the borrower because most of the time they'll get you the answers quicker than the IEP. Yeah, I mean, I don't need to add that anywhere on here, right? That's just how you can, you'll just handle it from now on.
Yeah, yeah, I guess my question is more specific to like, because if somebody just puts as soon as possible, I usually just interpret that as in like they're not in a huge rush, but as soon as it can get done. I'm just wondering like how much do I need to make sure I clarify that from a placement standpoint?
I would just get an exact date from them. I mean, most of these people, if they're in a purchase and sales agreement, the date that they need to close is usually right on the first page.
Sure, yeah.
Uh-huh. So, I mean, it's not really it's not hard like to – the borrower knows when they need to close. And but here's the thing, though. I don't know what ASAP means, you know? Because ASAP to me means, like, I needed to close 5 days ago, you know? Or sometimes I've talked to borrowers and ASAP does mean, oh, I have 30 days. We just need a date because as we're trying to, as you know, we're always waiting on these borrowers to provide us things so we can move their file forward. So what people do to the processor and what they're going to do to all of you is they're going to try to rush you to move their file forward, but you're always just going to go back to the basics and say, look at the checklist. I need the items in red and under what's needed to order your appraisal in order to move forward. You have not sent me your rehab budget. I cannot order your appraisal. You know, you can't order a rehab appraisal without a rehab budget. So if we know the date that they need to close up front, this is just going to be better communication from day one because if they're telling you, I have to close in 2 weeks, and most rehab deals do take 2 weeks to get done, you can, you know, the processor knows, we always email these emails urgent anyways, but the processor knows to tell this person, when they follow up with them later that day that, hey, we sent you a document doc list, just want to make sure you got it. I need your stuff like tomorrow if you need to close in 14 days, you know? We should just put the exact date that they need to close, not like 14 days because 14 days from when? You know, today or was it 14 days from 3 days ago? Like we just need the date. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. All right. I'm going to try to get through most of this as quickly as I can. Trina, I'm not sure if you're able to, but did you want to go over the how to issue a fee agreement from processing?
I suppose my biggest thing is you just log into it separately. I think the biggest thing is I have to make sure everybody has the link because Adobe makes it very difficult to find it. I remember you going crazy for like 2 days until I sent you the link.
Yeah.
But what I can do is get the link and the passwords out to everybody, and once they do, that's all it takes. That was where the confusion was, to walk through everybody really quick. Once you have that and the login, because it's, again, much easier to have that in front of you than have it explained to you, is you put the first name, the participant name, as whoever is giving the, I guess it would be whoever did the placement. Because they would be the one, whoever sent it out with how many points and everything, because they would be able to fill in, not points, I know we're not doing that anymore, but what the fee is and what the address is, and, you know, they would have all that, and they would be the ones signing it on that end. So they would be the first name, and the second name is the client.
Yeah, but, you know what? I have the username and password, too, so I'll just add that to this section.
But I was going to say, as long as we have the link, now if somebody that does the Adobe signs for human resources is getting my account instead, just make sure you have logged out completely and then do it because we did have some people that had that problem as well, and it's just because the link automatically brought you into my version of it. And it is a completely separate for these.
Well, Trina, I did it this morning. I tried it yesterday in the processing. I had the email. I mean, I had the login and password. It wasn't a matter of being able to log in. It was a matter of being able to have it function the same way that it does in your account, which it does not as of yesterday. And then I tried it again today. It functioned slightly differently than yesterday, but still, like instead of emailing me the agreement to where I then fill in and sign it, it popped right up with that instead of emailing it to me, only it wouldn't allow me to put the date in. I couldn't get that.
The date automatically fills in, that's why.
I know it should, but it didn't, and I couldn't change it. And so I had to just log out and use your account again this morning. So I don't know if it's still...
That's really odd. Yeah, I was going to say, because it worked when I tried it, and it's not a matter of being under my account. I log out of my account completely and into the new one to do it. So it should work the same for all of us. So it's very odd that it's working differently. But, you know, I did the test, and if that ran right, it might be a difference because you're sending it to yourself, but it shouldn't, as long as you're sending it to our Omara, not processing. If you're sending it to processing, well, it's going to confuse it because that's the account it's listing under.
No, I put in my email. I mean, it worked fine. I did the same steps with your account, and it works fine. Like, you put in your email, then it emails to me, and then I change what I need to change, sign it, and send it out. It just doesn't do that from the processing account.
All right. Again, I can't duplicate the issue, but I will keep trying because, unfortunately, if I can't duplicate it, I can't fix it because it's working when I see it. But I will see what I can do. Obviously, we can't tell everybody then if there's still an issue that people are running into.
Well, it'd be interesting to see if other people are having the same issue as I am. I don't know what it would be specific with me, but I don't know. So just FYI. Right.
Well, why don't we just keep doing it, guys, for now, like we were doing it with Trina's email, Marty and Ryan, and then we'll eventually figure it out. Eventually we should probably have these emails come from a generic processing, just because you confuse people when you keep adding so many people in the transaction. You know,
right.
Like there's the IEP, and then there's someone quoting them, and then they're being handed off to a processor, but yet the fee agreement's coming from someone else. And I've had people email me like, hey, I think is a spam email from Trina, like, who's Trina, you know? That's why I actually, and we're going to go through this a little bit more, I actually let people know that it will come from your email address. So they're
right. I saw that on the email that you send out, right?
Okay. Let's just try to run through the rest of this. I really just want to get through this stuff, even if we have to stay like 15 minutes later, because nothing is really major on here. It's just all processes and simple things that this is the steps that we follow, and we all need to know this in order to be able to do this.
Just a reminder to Chris to go get on his call, though, because I normally text him, but I can't while listening to you. So that's my token reminder for Chris.
He knows. Thank you. He'll probably forget in 2 minutes, but I'll try to remind him. All right. All right. Okay, guys, let's just move on because we don't have that much more to go through, so we're not going to be that far over. We'll figure out the fee agreement thing, but from now on, Marty, Ryan, let's just do it the way we've been doing it.
Okay.
All right, how to label a fee agreement. This is something that I do that I don't think I've ever shared with anyone that's really actually important for whoever is going to email the doc list, which is then the next step. So we're going to do the fee agreement in Adobe Sign, and then once you do it, Adobe Sign gives you the option to download a copy. And obviously, it's only going to be signed by the 11 Capital person who has signed it. It's not signed by the buyer yet. So when I download that, labeling is everything in this business. You have to label things. And it's not going to be such a big deal if you're just running two loan files, because you're going to have more time to go through things because you only have two loan files. But if you're trying to run like 40 like I am, you can't. Like, everything has to be labeled perfectly. So just so you know, when you download the copy that our team signed, make it the borrower's name, fee agreement, and then do dash signed by 11 Capital and save it as that. And then that copy can go to the processor for now until we can figure this out and the processors can start doing the fee agreements themselves. But just because I put that in a folder for them, for the borrower, folders, we just set up by the borrower's name. You should just have a folder on your desktop called loans, and then, you know, the loans in there. But I do separate things, and this is something I want to add. I separate all my files I have four folders. So I have active loans, I have maybe loans, and that's where we've issued a fee agreement and a document list, but we don't have the fee agreement back yet signed. Once it's back and signed, I move it into active. That's the only time a client or the deal kind of starts becoming real, we don't even have an appraisal ordered yet, but we're going to hopefully get there. I have dead loans, and then I have closed loans. So you're going to want to probably organize your files like that, and I will redo this. Because, again, as you start doing more and more files, you need to figure out what's an active loan that I should be paying attention to. I can just go into that folder. What are the maybe ones where I don't have fee agreements back? We obviously are going to task ourselves to follow up for those and stuff. What deals are just totally dead? The person maybe emailed back and said, hey, I'm sorry, I've decided not to move forward. Or maybe something happened between the buyer and seller, and now the seller's not willing to sell the property anymore. That happens to us sometimes. You know, or sometimes appraisals do kill deals. There are other things that kill deals, and it's just dead. So that's what I do with the fee agreement. I put it in there, and then when I go into the file, again, it's in my maybe folder, but when I go into the file, I can see that I have a fee agreement back from them, but it was signed by 11 Capital. It's not signed by the borrower. One thing I should have put in there, and I'm going to make myself a note, and again, I'll resend this out tomorrow, so it'll be perfect. When you get the fee agreement back from the borrower signed, so whoever issues the fee agreement, it actually comes back signed to them. That's how it works. But once it comes back and it's signed, I download the fully executed copy. I put the borrower's name and then fee agreement and then fully executed. And that's how I label it. So I know when I go into my file again, especially if someone's being a real pain and a borrower is being very, very difficult, first thing I do is I go into that file sometimes and I'm like, do we have a fee agreement on this person? Because they're giving me a really hard time for no reason. But just that's how I label things, and that's my suggestion to all of you, because this can become hectic. So you have a fee agreement signed by 11 Capital. At that point, you're going to send them the document list that lender requires. You're going to attach the fee agreement up top, and we'll have a little intro email that is below here that I'm going to explain to you guys in a second, but obviously just introduce yourself to the client. And then you're really just going to send the document list. You're going to send, you know, obviously email to the borrower, always copy the IAP. Another thing I should mention, and it is in here, it's just a lot of words because I'm really explaining this. We never, ever send, like we've talked about earlier, we never send lender applications with the lender's name on it until we have that fee agreement back. So when I send the doc list, and anyone who needs a doc list is going to come to me for now, you will see on some of those doc lists, it will actually say where, you know, lender application, and then it says in parentheses, will send once we have signed fee agreement back. And there might be other specific lender forms that lender needs, and I put the same information to the side so the client is aware. We will send that to you. You know, you're obviously aware that they have an application you have to fill out. We will send it to you once we get the fee agreement back. And that's just to protect us because the lender's name is right on there. And, again, the lender doesn't even know that we're dealing with this potential client yet or this borrower. So if this potential person got a hold of lender application, what if he just went to another rep or someone that we don't deal with there? How would they know that this deal came from us? You know, there's just so many different ways people can get to lenders. They wouldn't even know. They might know if they keep track of who they quote in their CRM, but not all of our lenders do that. So we're out of luck. Okay. Another thing in here, I just wanted to say, especially for the new people, and I've been doing this now too, just because I'm trying to close so many loans that, you know, if someone had a question about their quote, obviously I can answer all those questions. And I used to do all that back and forth with them, even though I know Ryan and Marty have spent a numerous amount of time going over the quote with them, explaining everything to them. People still sometimes have questions when they need to sign something, like a document saying, hey, this broker is going to earn this fee. For now, and I've been doing this to both you, Marty and Ryan, if someone has a lot of questions about their quote, I've just been pushing them back on the quota because I just have to focus on getting these deals that we have to close this week so I can pay everyone that needs to be paid. But ladies in the office, you're going to have to do that because you're not going to know right away how to answer these questions. Again, anyone that needs to call me, just give me a call. I can certainly answer them, too, if Ryan and Marty are not available. Okay. Just another thing, too. All of our document lists are broken up. I might try to break this up a little bit more because I'm kind of writing in paragraphs, so I know it might be a lot to read and get follow along to. But all of our document lists are broken up into docs needed to order appraisal and then docs needed to fully close the loan. There are some I have to revise, but if you got anyone needs a document list, I will revise it and get it to you. Next bullet point, just how emails should be titled on deals. This is a really quick one, but I gave a lot of examples. We always title emails by the borrower's name, then file, the word file. So Megan Krejci file, if I'm the borrower, the date, and then what the email is about. You know, once you're when you're first emailing about the when you're first emailing the borrower to introduce yourself, that is actually titled fee agreement because we don't have the fee agreement back yet. We're making them aware before you sign this fee agreement, you know, we've sent you a digital Adobe signed copy. Now here's a hard copy attached. Here's all the document lists, all the documents the lender needs below to close, just so you're aware. I always title that email fee agreement, and it is the first one listed there because that's what I need to move forward on their deal, and you'll see how I introduce myself and let them know that in the second in the bullet point below. But it could be anything. It's always their name, the date. People are going to email you back about deals maybe a day or 2 days later, and you have to change the date. If you emailed someone today and they don't get back to you until the 20th, when you respond, make it the 20th. And I'm telling you, this is going to make your life so much easier, actually, because when people start sending you stuff in, you know, you what you can do is instead of trying to retype out the whole entire document list, just look up that borrower's email in your sense and go to the last email you sent them that has a date and docs needed or documents needed, if you want to spell out the whole word document. And then you're just going to forward that, take off the things they already sent you, or you might, you know, they might send you stuff, but it needs to be edited. Hey, you sent me the credit auth. I needed that, but you didn't sign it. You filled it out. Can you please, you know, you're going to have to put in parentheses next to that document that you need. Thank, you know, I received this. Thank you, but it needs to be signed. Can you please send it back signed, or whatever you want to say. When someone needs edits on documents that they sent in, again, I forward the document list. I take out what they sent. That's okay. And anything that's need edited, I keep obviously the document there, but the edits I highlight in red, just like you're seeing the red on this Word document, just so they're aware that, hey, I know you sent me this, but again, something on it's missing, you know, that needs to be fixed. All right, how to introduce yourself to a customer. This should be honestly basic, but I just want everyone out there to understand, you know, obviously we're titling the emails correct, we're copying the IEP, but I just want everyone to understand, like, how you should introduce yourself to a client so they feel comfortable. They all know that we're part of the same team. And when you're doing this handoff process with borrowers, they get scared. It rattles them that they're dealing with, you know, an IEP, and that IEP might not know what they're talking about, again, because they're brand new to the business. Then they deal with, you know, Ryan or Marty or me that's quoting them, pretty much Ryan and Marty, who obviously know more about the business. And then, you know, they're dealing with a processor. One of the reasons I hesitated on giving this process up is because when you do hand someone off a couple times like that, if they're not speaking to people that really understand the business, they tend to get nervous. But that is okay. It, you know, what you're going to have to just tell people is, you know, any questions you can't answer for them, that you will get answered for them within 24 hours. So just let people know that. But really, you're just here to collect some documents and do some follow-up with them and help them coordinate with their parties to get the loan done. So this is really how I introduce myself. I, you know, give them my name and let them know I work at Love and Capital Finance with your loan representative, whoever it is. I just threw Dana in there. And then whoever quoted her, I always put, you know, Manager Ryan O'Mara or Manager Marty Johnson or whoever quoted her, and just let them know I'll be your loan processor and closer on this file. You know, Ryan, let me know you want to move forward on your deal, locate that. And I always put the full address because sometimes, you know, borrowers would give us multiple properties to quote them on. So if you don't put the address in the email, they don't know if you're quoting them on 276 South 11th Street or 275 South 11th Street. Like they're not going to know what property address are you referring to. So everything you do has to be very, very, very specific. You have to remind people three different ways. This is how we're attached to your transaction. Okay, as you can see right in here, I still say to people, I literally just copied and pasted this email. This is how I introduce myself to people when I am processing their loan files. You know, I had a fee agreement sent to you via DobleSign. It'll come from Trina Gustavson. Sometimes I actually even end the paragraph like that so they can see Trina's email. But I also let them know I've attached a hard version here. If you want to hand print and sign, they can fax it back to us. They can use my fax, my e-fax number, or they can email back. And then I just kind of let them know these are the documents the lender is going to need below to get your loan closed. If there is some type of rehab or ground-up construction deal component of the deal, I always let them know, you know, make sure your contractor, your builder is properly licensed and insured. And I know I went over that yesterday, but you're going to have to remind people that a million times, because I can't tell you how many of these rehab deals I do with people, and we get down to it, and even in the document list, it's asking them, I need a copy of your contractor's license, copy of their insurance. And for some reason, they thought I was just joking that the lender was going to need that, but I wasn't. And I need it, and the contractor can't produce it. And then they are scrambling. But see, it's a good thing we tell people this from day one, because what the natural reaction is, this person who now is scrambling to find a contractor who's properly licensed and insured may call the office and be mad. You know, they might want to do that because they've put themselves in a situation where they did not either properly read the initial document list, or they just thought maybe somehow they were going to get around it. And they may want to call, and your response to them is, you know, Nathan, I saw that on the document list, and we let you know from day one, this lender wants a copy of their license and insurance. At that time and point was your time to speak up and let me know if your contractor could not provide that. So this is why we do all of this and the steps that we do, and we overdo it. Because when you're dealing with deals, people just like to get uppity. But just, you know, always remember, if we just stick with the basics, you're always covering your butt. Okay. So then after you send them the document, you know, once Office of the Bar gives you that initial list of what you need, we actually put the stuff in the appraisals ordered pipeline, which is right in our CRM. Appraisals ordered, it's the one that has the dollar sign next to it. We always use the appraisals ordered. I should have put in there, the way we track borrowers, you know, or a self-originated borrower is just a borrower, but we have multiple lead sources. And I think obviously, ladies in the office, you probably already know that, you know, we have leads from P1 lead source, K1 lead source. They all have pipelines too. So I always do appraisals ordered and enter into the pipeline, but I also, under where they are, like if they're a P1 borrower, I also put the appraisal order in the P1 section too, because in my head I'm thinking if Trina has to give that lead source an update on where their deals are, she's not pulling it from the appraisals ordered pipeline. She's pulling it from the P1 pipeline. So that's why I put it in twice. I put in the appraisals ordered and always in appraisals ordered. That's our pipeline that we keep track of our appraisals ordered. But wherever the lead source came on, P1, I think we have a K1. I'm not even sure how you guys figured all that out, but that's just how I've been tracking it. There's just some notes in here I put in here. You know, when you're going to order an appraisal for, you know, when this borrower is going to, you know, obviously you need to make sure these documents are approved. They're going to put up money for this appraisal. I put some fees of costs in here. You know, residential appraisals, which are 1-4 unit, you know, investment properties, typically 500 to 800 per property, depending on how many units it is. Obviously a SFR, stands for single family residence, is smaller. And then 2 units, probably like 600, you know, 3 units, 700, 40 to 800, it's higher depending on the units. People are going to ask you how much. People are going to ask you all the time, even though they know, how much is this appraisal going to cost. Commercial appraisals are much, much, much more expensive. And when someone's forking up money like that, you know, you just want to be sure, because I've had myself in situations where, again, the point is you want to make sure this lender has ran a credit check on this borrower and they pass. And if the lender requires a background check, that they ran that as well. And I know it seems silly that you have to ask the lender's processors if they did their job, but I have literally been at a closing with someone and had a lender call me and tell me that their credit did not pass and they can't do the loan. So that's a very awkward situation to be in. Like, you don't want to have to call someone when literally they're at closing. The lender sent mortgage documents. Title company has them. They're printed out. They're signing them. And then the lender's like, oh, we forgot to run credit. They actually don't qualify for this rental loan. That was a really crappy conversation for me to have to call someone and have. And thank God he was such a sport about it. And last second, I did find an option for him where I could just put him into a bridge loan with that lender. Thank God that lender did bridge loans. You just don't want to be in that situation. The lenders will always defer to you to communicate with the borrower. And lenders do this thing where they like to sometimes get involved in the transaction when things are going great and they're happy. But when some bad news has to be delivered, oh, they're gone. No one answers the phone. No one's anywhere to be found. So just, again, CYA. So you're not the person that has to be the person to deliver some really bad news. Like someone spent $5,000 on an appraisal and the lender comes in and they're like, you know, we didn't run their credit. Their credit doesn't pass. And no other lender will probably accept that appraisal. So they just spent $5,000 for no reason. That's not a good conversation to have. One other note, a lot of our lenders now are using AMCs, which stands for appraisal management companies. I see this more on the 1-4 units, which sometimes there is an upcharge to that. The appraisals can be a little bit more expensive, typically like $100 more a piece. But what that AMC does is they manage appraisers. They find the best appraiser, do it for the quickest turnaround, typically, is what every borrower wants. And they stay on the appraiser to make sure that report comes back in a timely fashion because the lender would have to do that, and that's just one other person that they have to communicate with. All right, just what we put in the appraisals in our pipeline, I could spell this out even more, but I think it's pretty much self-explanatory. Every time I actually get to the point where I've gotten all the documents, I lender told me their credit check, we're good. If they run a background check, we're good on that. You know, I then enter into the appraisal order pipeline. This is what I put in there. I put what lender we're doing the loan with, the loan amount, what points we're charging, what that fee equals, who placed it, who's processing. I put everyone that needs to be paid out. You know, this is a P1 lead, they need to be paid. The IAP needs to be paid. I obviously put the address of the property. Loan number, I always ask the lender for the loan number. And this is something I got to put in this even more, which I'll put in the processing section. You know, just some things I put in here, like 8-unit. You want to know what the property type is. And that's even something you want to put in the background notes because there's different closing times for different property types. So that's good to know if you're ever in a bind and someone calls you in a frantic, you can look up and you're like, wow, this is an 8-unit. That's a commercial appraisal. That's not closing quicker than 30 days. Something important I put in here, Ryan let me know that it's borrower rents, and that's just important for velocity because they don't usually allow that, but they are. Purchase price is spelled wrong, but I put that in there because he changed the purchase price on the deal, and I wanted to make sure I knew that. Closing date I always put in there, and then the company name. And that's always what we put in appraisals ordered. One other thing I should have put in there, which I didn't, big no-no, I didn't put if this was a refinance or a purchase transaction. I should have put that in there because purchases are obviously always more urgent because you have a closing date where the seller wants that closing date met. Refinances are not always such a big deal, especially if there's no debt on the property. You know, we're obviously going to move in a timely fashion to get it done, but you know, it's not the end of the world if it's going to take them an extra week. This is just some quick stuff, and then we'll get off. I'll see if anyone has any questions. Just make sure to log all communication to CRM. I know it's a pain. I'm sorry. We're having the new CRM built, but for now, we do have to copy and paste all this stuff into the CRM. I see some of you tasking each other stuff, and you're responding to the tasks up in the CRM. But please be aware that once you click that task off, it's not in the activity feed. So nobody knows that communication. Me and Evie were doing that for a little bit back and forth. And then, you know, I said to her, hey, we have to make sure we put all these notes in the activity feed. Like I would give Evie a task, hey, call this person, you know, their credit didn't check, see if they can add someone else to the deal. This lender allows that. So she would do that task, but she would respond to the task, if that makes sense for everyone on the phone. And she's responding to the task, so I can see her response up by the task, but it's not actually in the activity feed. So, and Hope, I saw you doing this a little bit today too. So again, no one's going to know once you check that task off what that back and forth was. So just remember, we always have to put everything in activity seed. And as more and more people call the office frantic, you're really going to understand why, because, you know, say, you know, someone calls, hey, let, you know, get your name, pull them up this year, I'm put them on hold for a second so you can see what's going on. You are going to want to see what's going on, because the goal is when people call in to answer their question very quickly. But if we're not all actively sharing information, that's not going to be a possibility. All right. We'll go over processing probably Thursday. Tomorrow I'm going to touch on processing, but then we're also going to really touch on documents tomorrow. I'm going to show you guys a lot of examples of documents. So I will go over how to put in a title request, how to put in an insurance request. For anyone who doesn't know, I mean, just real quick, every lender requires property insurance in order to lend on a property. If the property doesn't have property insurance and the lender's not updated as the additional insured, the lender will not lend on it. Kind of obviously makes sense. They want to make sure they're protecting the loan that they've lent against this property. You would think most people would know that. Some people don't. Some people have free and clear properties, and if you have a free and clear property, you don't have to have insurance if you don't want to have insurance. I don't think there's any law that you have to have insurance. I'm not sure with the states, but I've seen people that have free and clear properties and just don't have property insurance. So if they're trying to do a refi cash out transaction, pull some of that cash out of that free and clear property, you're going to have to let them know, I understand you don't have property insurance because property is free and clear, but you're going to want to go get yourself a quote right now, because the lender will require that before closing. Title insurance. Title insurance is, we have a really cool training about title insurance in our portal, or hopefully it's in our portal, but we did a really cool training call about title insurance with First American about a year or two ago, and they really explained title insurance, but the gist of it is title insurance is there to actually protect the property from any past lien or anything that was ever liened against this property by a former owner, to make sure that that does not follow now the new owner. So that's what the title company does. They go back through all the records of the property, typically like 30 years back, they'll go and just make sure like all these liens, like if a lien was put, it was paid off. Because if you buy a property and you don't get title insurance and say there's a $10,000 delinquent water bill attached to this property, you're now responsible for that. So no one should ever be buying a property without title insurance. But there are some people, unfortunately, that do decide, well, hey, I'm going to cut cost of $2,000, what a title policy would cost me, and don't realize that you now may have made yourself liable for a lot of other money because you didn't check the background on the property. There's obviously public records and obviously ways that anyone can do that, but just a title company is ensuring that if they did not catch everything on the day of closing, if any liens do follow this property, the title company is now responsible for them, not the person that bought the property. So in my eyes, I wouldn't mind spending $2,000 on a title insurance policy or whatever it's going to cost to make sure that if something got weird and they slipped up somewhere and somehow a $10,000 water bill tries to come after me, it's not my responsibility anymore. It's the title company's. That's what title insurance is for. People are going to ask you that all the time. Just follow up with documents. We do twice a week with your clients, always an email and a phone call. And then just, we already went over recapping on docs, and there's just a couple last things. Hope, I know you have to go, but maybe we can go over keeping track of documents in the Google Drive some other time. I think you made an email address for that.
Oh, in regards to the Google Drives and putting everything up on the Google Drives, I sent the email out to everybody, I think.
Yeah, I just didn't know, like we just go to gmail.com and log in?
To gmail.com, you log in, or you go to Drive, and you just log in as that login, and then you just navigate to Google Drive. It's because Google has all of their stuff all linked together. So if you have a Gmail account, you have a Drive account.
Yeah, I actually don't use Google that much, so I'm a little not very familiar with Google, but I'll just email you to get some type of explanation of how to log in. And I guess, do you have to upload the documents to it, or can you just sync it with your desktop?
You can sync it with your desktop.
Okay. All right. Maybe we could just get some step-by-step stuff to add to that thing, so it's more detailed.
Okay. I hope I did not receive any login info on that. So if you can send that out.
Is that, I don't know the voice. Is that Ryan?
Ryan.
Okay. for some reason, because of your last name, I'm expecting some Irish brogue or something. I'm sorry. So when I hear your voice, I'm like, who is that?
He is not a leprechaun. It's okay.
Anyway, but go ahead. Yeah, I'll send that out to you.
I just sent it out to everyone. Hope I saved
okay.
it. Anything
Yay.
Important that any of you guys send me, I have a folder of like important company stuff. I save everything in there. So I'll update that to explain how to log in and connect documents to it. And that's really it, guys. I mean, does anyone have any questions?
The one thing about the Google documents is you have to make sure that you set the sharing to whoever has the link and make sure that everything is set that way, because otherwise you could upload something and nobody sees it.
So that's something that,
yeah.
See, I want to actually explain it so that it's idiot proof. I don't use Google really. I use Yahoo for my regular emails.
Mm-hmm.
So I mean, if there's a way to explain like how to set it, I'll even try to go around and play around with it. But
well, as long as anybody has access to it, whoever has access to it and logs in, they don't need to have the document shared to them. They'll just have access to the account.
They just have access to it straight up. But that was one of the things I ran into before.
Okay. But, I know we didn't. I didn't really go over. I've kind of gone over set up desktop to manage loans. I want to actually put some pictures there. Just how, again, I just have these four folders on my desktop. I have loans, and then inside there, there's active, maybe, dead, closed. Those are really the four statuses of deals, because we move so quickly on loans. You just, as you're processing more and more files, you guys are going to want to know what's dead, what's closed, what's active, and maybe is, you know, when is this person getting me back this fee agreement? Does anyone have any other questions? I know we went a little over. All right, guys.
Not
I
all,
think
but what I think I might do to help everybody out is once I get a more finalized version of this training manual, I could probably just throw it into PowerPoint so we have visuals there too, if you want.
Yeah, I mean, what I was going to do is just try to put everything just right in here, you know,
mm-hmm.
and I'm going to always keep it a Word document just so that people can literally copy and paste, you know, so, I mean, even the way I'm introducing myself to borrowers, it doesn't need to be typed out again. Just copy and paste
right.
it. Throw it into the email, or there's a lot of things in here that don't need to be copy and paste. You know, obviously, how to request a fee agreement from someone, how to put an appraisals order, they can literally just copy and paste. So if I can just put like maybe a brief explanation as to how to log into Google, you know, the Google Drive and what setting it needs to be on to make sure that all of the files are backed up, you know, maybe we could just make it really simple. The only other thing, I know everyone's got to go, the only thing I didn't go over is I didn't go over any questions about the fee agreement. You know, ladies in the office, as you are following up with people to get them to move forward, which obviously they need to sign the fee agreement, people are going to have questions about the fee agreement for you. I have tried to make our fee agreement as simple as possible. It used to be full with a bunch of legal jargon. I'm not even sure where I got that. Chris gave me a copy of it somewhere. And I've really taken a lot of the legal stuff out and just made it like really simple. All the important parts of the fee agreement are underlined. And I can even send everyone a copy, you know, maybe that's, you know, when we go over docs, let's go over the fee agreement. We can do that tomorrow, but, I've tried to make everything really simple and underline things, and it clearly states our fee. It clearly states when we get paid, which is on the day of closing. And it clearly states, it clearly explains that if we connect the borrower directly with the lender, that they feel an acceptable lending offer and going to move forward from, then we are due a fee. But again, only on the day of closing if their deal closes. So it's very clear about all that. So does anyone else have any questions? All right. I think we're good. I'm going to let everyone go. And tomorrow we will go over more processing and documents. I'll send an email out to everyone just to see what time is good for them. Thank you guys for being on the call. Bye.
Thank you.
Bye. Have a good day.
Bye-bye.
Hope, are you still on?
Yeah, I am.
Okay. Are you going to end the recording?
Yeah, I'll end the recording.